The text is Micah 6, and it's one of those lectionary selections that you're kind of wondering why it is. This is a heavy law text, and you don't really think of Epiphany as the time you're blasting away at people like this. Maybe Lent, but not Epiphany. I think that it's coupled to the gospel, which is the Beatitudes, if I'm not mistaken. And I smell a little 60s lectionary social gospel connection here. The lectionary was in a large part worked out in the 60s, and you got to remember that. Do a little historical exegesis on the lectionary. In any case, it's a great text, and it's not necessarily a law text, and can certainly be used with good benefit about what it means to be God's people, especially in the Epiphany themes of light and mission to the Gentiles. The historical background of Micah is essentially the same as Isaiah. They share some oracles in common and a lot of themes in common. And you might want to ponder a little bit the historical context of this, that the people themselves were still living in darkness. That was the Isaiah text last week, Isaiah 1, these people. And yet they have experienced the light, even though in their historical moment with Assyria crushing in on them, it must have seemed a little bit dark. And in that sense, the light becomes... the light that is ours, both present and future, as that which gives us hope. That doesn't drive the present is kind of at the basis of this law proclamation, that the people of God haven't been living as sons of light, essentially, and have kind of preferred the darkness, and maybe that's a way to get into that Epiphany theme a little bit more. You can read the rest of the book of Micah for all the mischief that's going on here. To a large degree, this is a typical catalog of social sins with the rich exploiting the poor and all these sorts of things that can be easily transferred into the left-hand kingdom, but for the sake of understanding the text, need to be anchored in the right-hand kingdom. These are, after all, the way the people of God are acting toward each other. Okay. Now... it's also a classic, almost textbook example of the so-called covenant lawsuit. If you were in Isaiah, we were talking about this the other day with Isaiah chapter 1, where God calls his people to court with nature, specifically the mountains and the hills or the heavens and the earth being the witness, more in the sense of jury than a testifier. In fact, here you actually have the word reeve used. So with that as an introduction, let's get to work. Shemuna eth asher Yahweh omer. Here, nah. However you translate, nah. Here, eth asher. Asher is the direct object, a noun clause. That which Yahweh is amar-ing. All right? Here, what Yahweh is saying. Well, here's presumably what he is saying. Kum reev eth ha'arim. Get up. Reeve. Here's your imperative verb. This is the hollow root reeve to plead your case or take someone to court. Chances are the eth here is the preposition. It's not exactly contend the mountains or contend with the mountains in the sense of sue the mountains. That just doesn't make sense. But plead your case before, with the mountains present. Since they are usually the witnesses to the courtroom scene. And tishmana, hey, there's a nice imperfect feminine form. This is really the jussive. Give oath is feminine. And let the hills hear kol laka, your kol. Let the hills hear your voice. Shemu, note that those imperatives are singular, probably addressed to the Am Yisrael, the Am as a collective singular. In verse 2 now, the imperative is plural. Shemu Harim. Hear, O mountains, the reeve of Yahweh. If in verse 1 he's telling the people to plead their case, now he's kind of twisted that and said, no, really, it's the reeve of Yahweh. See? It's kind of the reversal. When you go into court to plead foul, and suddenly you find out that you're the one that's been foul, sort of the plaintiff suddenly turns into the defendant. So hear, O mountains, the reeve of Yahweh. And now you got a text critical problem here with atanim. The word atanim should mean something like streams that don't run dry. Doesn't make any sense here unless this is in some way connected to the most day Eretz, which are the foundations of the earth. Almost all commentaries tell you this. Almost all translations do this without telling you, and they change etanim to ha'azinu, not the root atan, but the word azan, which means to hear or give ear, and is such an appropriate parallel to Shemu at the beginning, that here's one of those text-critical decisions that's too good to be wrong. Though, it's interesting to note, there's no real textual evidence for that. I don't think so. What is the... Yeah, see, the text-critical footnote just says, read Hazinu. Well, there's no manuscript that's got it spelled that way. But there you have it. I don't know if you want to read it the way it is. You're going to have to contrive a translation using these everlasting streams. Let's not worry about it. To be, ki reev le Yahweh, for there is a reev belonging to Yahweh, im amo, with his am, with his people, and with Yisrael, yith waka, he will yakach in the hithpael. Okay? He will argue it out reciprocally. I suppose that's kind of the idea of this. Yakak is this word for render a just decision, usually through appropriate legal proceedings. And with Israel, he will argue out toward a decision. Well, here's his opening statement now. Here's his complaint, verse 3. Ami, my people... Notice he addresses it directly to the people. He's not appealing to the mountains anymore. My people, may asithi laka. What? You can actually translate this. What? Asithi have I done. Asa, third hey. Laka, to you. What have I done to you? And ma helethika. And what? Helethika. Tough form, hifil, perfect, root, la'a, third hey is gone. You have the t as the first person suffix, and the ka as the direct object suffix. La'a means to be weary, the hifil means to weary, wear somebody out. And what have I wearied you? All right, with what have I worn you out? Anevi, answer. Me. Ane is imperative from ana. Answer me. 4. Ki, because, or for, helithika, again, a hifil form of a third hey root. The third hey is gone. The root here is Allah to go up and the hifil bring up. For I have brought you up, me Eretz Mitzrayim, from the land of Egypt, and Mabeth of Adim, and from a house of slaves, Pedathika, I have padad you. Pada means to redeem. I have ransomed you. And Eshlak, I have shalakt lifneka before you, Eth Moshe, Achron, and Miriam. I have sent before you Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. Interesting, Miriam gets in the game here. It's a great feminist text that she got cut out of most other texts due to the chauvinistic editorial process. Why BHS puts verse 5 there, I don't know. I think it's Metra metri causa. Otherwise, the second half of 4B is too short. I find those arguments irrelevant. Ami goes with the next line and parallels verse 3. My people, Zakorna, Zakor, remember, imperative, remember, Ma-Ya'atz Balak Melech Moav. What? Ya'atz, to counsel or advise, Kal perfect, that's the root itself, Ya'atz. Remember what Balak, king of Moab, counseled, determined to do. And, second half of the line, what Ana Otho Bil'am Ben Ba'or. You know how that works? You got to read up to get the rest of the line there enclosed in brackets. Ben Ba'or. And what Balaam Ben Ba'or Anad answered him. Okay? Remember this story? This is the Balak hired Balaam to curse, and then, of course, he couldn't do this, and he blessed them. All right? Why these examples? I mean, this isn't one that stands out in the Exodus history unless you read Numbers, where it's a significant part of the book of Numbers. I mean, it kind of gets lost. There's maybe one Sunday school lesson on this story, and everybody remembers the donkey more than they do the message. All right. But here's I suppose, the exegetical point. We are certainly recounting the Exodus. All right? We start with Egypt, and now we are on the plains of Moab. So you sort of have a little inclusio from Egypt to the plains of Moab, and this sort of stands out as the incident at the end of the Exodus, when they're intended to go into the land, the last enemy tries to get rid of them, and it blows up in their face, and they end up getting blessed instead of getting cursed. Now we move sort of the next step along the way, Min HaShittim Ad HaGilgal, from the Shittim place up to the Gilgal place. These are place names. Shittim is really the last site in Transjordan, and Gilgal is the first encampment on the West Bank, all right, in Cisjordan. So this is focusing now on another little inclusio. It's kind of the last leg, you see, of the race when you actually crossed the Jordan. He doesn't say you crossed the river, but that's what's in the middle between Shittim and Gilgal. From the across the river, for the sake of the da'ath from Yada, for the sake of the knowledge of the tzedakahs of Yahweh. Boy, is that a great line. For the sake of the knowledge of the righteousnesses of Yahweh. Plural. Here, righteousness really referring to specific acts of God in the plural. For the sake of the knowledge of the righteousnesses of Yahweh. In other words, that was the whole point of the Exodus, you see, so that you might know the good acts that Yahweh would do, has done, and continues to do for his people. Now, there's a little gospel anchor for all of this stuff, right? And that's the point, you see, that this really starts with God's action in redemption from bondage. Now, verse 6 seems to switch to the response of the people. Bama ekadem Yahweh, with what shall I, kadam really means to front, face, approach, Yahweh. Ikaf lelo he marom. Now, if you can parse ikaf, you win a free lunch, all right? Ikaf is, any offers? Nifal, imperfect. The dagish there is the nun of the nifal. So if your first guess was first nun root, nakaf, you are making an intelligent guess that happens to be wrong. All right. If it's any comfort, that's what I thought it was too, and I looked it up, and there isn't any. Well, I followed my own procedure. When I couldn't figure it out, I assumed it must be a geminate verb, kafaf, with a double P at the end, and that's what it is. Niphal, imperfect of Kafaf. It means to bow down. All right, let's not lose time on it. The Bama goes first. With what shall I approach Yahweh? With what shall I bow down to the God of height? Marom from room high, exalted God. This is the response now. What shall I bring? What shall I render to the Lord for all his benefits to me? Does anyone actually sing that version? It's a nice little piece in the new hymnal. Ha akademenu. The hey here is interrogative. Question mark. Shall I approach him with oloth, with offerings, whole burnt offerings, with egelim. These are, egels are calves, young cows, sons of a year. This is Hebrew idiom for your age. Son of a year means 1 year old. So this is with yearling calves, which were valuable because they had kind of made it through the first year, so they weren't going to die in infancy, and now were an appropriate investment in the future. And to eat one of these was kind of, you know, like selling your stock just before it was going to go up, and was also kind of a delicacy for that reason, like veal is, tender young beef. Question mark, verse 7, another hey interrogative. Question mark. Yirtse is the imperfect of Ratzah, to be pleased with a sacrifice. Will Yahweh be pleased with Alfei Elim, with thousands of rams, with Rivavoth, with 10,000s of wadis? A nachal is a flood river plain, you know, a seasonal flood stream. Wadis of oil, so gushing flood-type oil. All right? You get the point here. Right, it's not quantity we're after, folks. 7b, ha, another hey interrogative. At 10 from Nathan, shall I give my bakor, my firstborn, as my rebellion? This is the idea of quid pro quo. You give a sacrifice that takes the place of your sin. So shall I render my firstborn as my rebellion, the fruit of my womb, the sin of my nephesh. All right? Shall I sacrifice my own flesh and blood for my sins? Will this impress God? Obvious answer, no. 8. Here comes the response. Higid laka Adam. He will, or he has, really, it's perfect. He has related laka to you, O Adam. Me tov. What is good? And what Yahweh seeks, doresh from you. Here's what it is. Ki im really means it's the second half of a clause, all right? This is what you, don't do this, except that. It kind of means except. When it's used alone, it means this is it. Do nothing other than this, if you will. But unless, or but only, asoth, mishpat, to do mishpat, ahavath, to love chesed, and now you get a great crux here in translations. This is always translated, and to walk humbly before your God, or with your God. The first verb, hatznea, is a hapax legomenon. Hifil, infinitive, absolute, could be imperative, but we've all got infinitive constructs here. The leket is the infinitive construct of halak. This is the infinitive absolute being used as an adverb, modifying the infinitive. So what does tsana mean? Well, it's the adjective. I'll tell you the data here. The adjective is used one time in Proverbs as opposite to pride, which is where they get the suggestion this must mean to be humble. It's used 4 or 5 times in Sirach, however, which is later, and it has more the wisdom attitude of discernment, understanding, kind of understanding reality from God's perspective. That's what true wisdom is, after all. That may be better. So to walk with your God in a way that discerns reality from God's perspective, to paraphrase this, as I think would best be brought out. That would include humbly, but includes more than that. All right, we better quit. It's 10 after, Ray Jeff. We got some text.